At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, no matter where you are. We want to come and learn together and discuss a new healthcare approach that addresses the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive. All right. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I have two of our pharmacists with us today, Dr. Katie and Dr. Nicole. So you guys want to introduce yourselves? We'll start with Katie.
Sure. Yep. My name is Dr. Katie Johnstone. I am in Maine and we're here today to talk about continuous glucose monitors, aka CGM for short.
Awesome. And Nicole?
Hi again. I am Dr. Nicole Grams. I'm in Wisconsin. My focus is typically on anxiety, but I also am well-rounded and can talk about glucose monitors as well.
Yeah. And you can share some of your personal experience.
Absolutely.
I think we've all three of us have worn one before just to test it out and see how our nutrition is going. But just to start with a little bit of background. So continuous glucose monitoring, like Katie said, is abbreviated CGM. So where this comes from is that it's a small device that measures your glucose levels. It actually measures your interstitial glucose. So it's just the fluid right underneath the skin. And currently they are approved. So the indication from the FDA for use of these is for patients with diabetes. And so I have been in the diabetes world for now as a clinician for over like 12-ish years. And having CGM has changed my practice. Like having the ability to just take a picture of what someone is doing at home, see the ups and the downs, see what's going on at night, all of these things without asking a patient to get up in the middle of the night and check their blood sugar. I mean, it's just revolutionized the way we can care for patients with diabetes. Over that time period, we've become more and more, there's more and more studies about the use of this in diabetes. Patients with pre-diabetes that use CGM actually sometimes just reverse their symptoms by addressing what they're putting in their body because they're seeing what's happening. There's studies that it lowers A1C irregardless of starting, which A1C is that measure that we look at to see how well your blood sugar is controlled. And for people with diabetes, it's greater than 6.5. So in some cases, we see data that says it lowers A1C without even doing any medications, just because the patient is more aware of what's going on. It is, you know, showing you exactly what's going on. The caveat is that glucose in the blood it's a little bit delayed. So we always just describe it as it's like a train. So the front of the train is the glucose, the back of the train is the interstitial fluid. And so if you're going up, those numbers might look a little bit different. If you're going up the hill, when you're on a steady ground, they're going to be the same. And if they're going down the hill, certainly the blood glucose might get lower faster. So if people don't feel how the CGM is reading, we always recommend doing, if the patient has diabetes, doing a blood glucose reading to just double check. But it's not that it's inaccurate, it's just that there's a delay. And so that's important to talk about. And so the different types of CGM, so there is three main ones on the market. They're from companies. Medtronic is one, and it's called the Guardian Sensor. And then there is the Freestyle Libre. And then there also is a company called Dexcom. Also, there are actually implantable CGMs. And certainly this would be more for someone with diabetes that wants to have it implanted under the skin for a period of months. And then that gets removed and a new one gets put in. So they're continuing to work on that technology so that that can be hopefully, you know, year that the patient would have that without having to come back and get that redone. So that's more of a procedure done in an endocrinologist's office. What we're talking about today is the ones that are just put on the top of your skin and the sensor is just right underneath the skin. And so the differences between the different types. So Dexcom lasts for 10 days. They're currently in the US on the G6. It's called the Dexcom G6. It has a phone app so people can use the phone app and don't have to carry around a different receiver. Hopefully, I've been encountering some people with new phones and I had a patient yesterday that was trying to do their Omnipod Dexcom integration and unfortunately his brand new phone didn't have the Dexcom app. So we were trying to figure out how to sort of take care of that for him in this initial period. But most people can use the phone app. The Freestyle is now on the 3. Okay, so we had the Freestyle 14-day, the Freestyle 2, and now the Freestyle 3. And the third one actually took away the original ones for Freestyle and the ones that are probably more out there patients are using. You actually have to scan your arm to get the readings. And so for the third rendition, you actually don't have to do that. So you don't have to worry about missing readings because you forgot to scan. And so those two, though, you had to scan and then it would read back 8 hours and save that data. So they're continuing to improve and get better and get smaller. I mean, it's amazing how small the Freestyle Libre 3 is. And then the G7 for Dexcom that's coming hopefully next year in the US, it's already approved in Europe, is really small in one piece now as well. So we're getting so much more precise, so much smaller, making it easier for people to incorporate this into their toolkit. So for patients with diabetes, these devices may, you know, there's a couple pumps that actually work with them. So when their blood sugar goes up, their pump increases their insulin. When the blood sugar goes down, it stops the insulin. But what we're going to talk about today is not a labeled indication. So we're going to talk about using CGM for just monitoring health and wellness. How do we optimize our metabolic health? How do we tailor our diet so that we're not spiking our glucose throughout the day? And so most people that use it for this purpose don't necessarily wear one all the time because of a cost. It's not covered for people on their insurance if they are just wanting to wear it and they don't have diabetes. So out-of-pocket cost, the Freestyle Libre tends to be the one that people do end up buying out-of-pocket because it's less than $100 for two sensors if they're using like a coupon or something at the pharmacy. So, and there's other companies that sort of white label the Freestyle Libre and have that as part of different programs, which we can link in the show notes. But basically, this metabolic health that we're talking about today is really about how we use energy from food. Certainly, glucose is the primary source of energy in the body, but we have to have that tightly regulated. If we're going up and down all day long, that can actually trigger inflammation. And so that becomes an issue. And we also know that poor metabolic health is also associated with declining brain function or cognitive function, which we had a recent podcast talking about cognitive function. And so really keeping that glucose more tightly controlled, helping use these tools to prevent diabetes is where a lot of the research is going right now. And more than 80% of people with prediabetes aren't even aware they have it. And so when we talk about prediabetes, that means that these patients are more at risk for diabetes. 30 to 70%, which I know is a wide range, but different data looks has different numbers, will have the progression to diabetes within 4 years if they don't do something about it. And so we are passionate at Farm to Table about preventing these things. We're working on a diabetes prevention program, which we're going to hopefully share with you more information soon. And we really want to catch people then so that we can help them prevent the years of diabetes, which ultimately can lead to further complications and further decline in health. So that's why we're talking today about this and why it's really important that this kind of thing is starting to be used more and people are more aware of how to use it in their life. So again, it could be something that you just work with someone, a provider, to get a sensor for, you know, just a 2 week period and see what does it look like with my diet? What is the foods that I'm eating that are causing my blood sugar to spike? Is my blood sugar tanking throughout the day? And that's contributing to me maybe waking up in the middle of the night or not having good sleep scores. So I'm going to let Katie take over for a second and talk a little bit more about how they work.
Yeah. So the CGM, it's a biosensor device that you wear, usually on the back of your arm, and it measures the glucose. It's not the glucose in your blood, but the glucose in the interstitial fluid under your skin. So it's different than the traditional glucometer that you prick your finger and use strips for, which does measure the actual blood glucose. And so there is that lag in the reading from the interstitial fluid, but they are generally similar, and the companies do put in algorithms to correct for that. So you don't have to worry about doing any math or anything to figure that out. And so usually, like, when I describe it to people, it does sound super invasive. Like when they see it on the back of my arm, like, what is that? You know, what are you doing there? But it's just a little tag. It goes under the skin. It's pretty painless. So when you're using it, you clean the area with alcohol swab and you prep the device and then press it onto your skin. And I've used the Freestyle Libre. So that one kind of makes a really loud sound when you push it into the skin. It like clicks down. And so that kind of makes you jump. And I'm pretty terrified of needles and like faint at the sight of blood. So if I can do it, you can do it. It's okay. So then once it's on, there's usually like a calibration time, about an hour until you can use it. And then you just scan it with your phone. And like Melody said, it goes back so you can see your readings throughout the day. So I like to check it when I first wake up to see how I did overnight, to see if I had any super lows or highs. 2 hours after meals to see kind of what my postprandial glucose is like and how I responded to that meal. And then sometimes around exercise, I like to check too. So it's super interesting just to see like foods that you think are good for you, but then you see that you had a really high response, or foods that you thought are really bad and you may have responded better. Like I had a bagel with cream cheese that barely did anything to me. And then banana like sends me into the 180s. So you can really get a sense of how your body responds to foods in real time, which gives you insight into what's going on and really allows you to personalize your food choices. So that's kind of cool. Like personalized medicine without any pain or side effects.
Yes. Yes. I mean, obviously there is a risk of infection at the site, but that is very minimal in these type of devices. But yes, and the Dexcom is just a slightly different 2-hour warm-up period for that one, but then it starts just reading and you don't have to worry about scanning. But like I said before, the Freestyle Libre 3 also you don't have to scan. So if you're new to this and you're asking your provider to write a prescription, that's the one to go with if your phone has the ability to download the Freestyle Libre 3 app. So there's actually no reader. Some of the older Freestyle Libre products had readers that patients could use if they didn't have a cell phone app. The 3 does not have a reader. So that's an important note to make as well. So if I don't have diabetes, why would I do this is the question a lot of people are asking. And we're talking more about, again, like optimizing your food choices. Like Katie said, I did this one time and I was in my postpartum period, still nursing my son, super stressed about building our house. So it was, I need to do it again in a time where it wasn't like that because I wasn't getting enough sleep, but a sleep plays a huge role in your glucose. So I think even just multiple days without sleep changes your insulin sensitivity, affects your glucose levels. So knowing how those kinds of things affect, even aside from dietary choices, but oatmeal was one of the things that is like a healthy food, you know, that people talk about the fiber and how good this is for you, that just like skyrockets a lot of people's blood sugars, even people that don't have diabetes. And it's interesting because there's a lot of discussion on like people that are missing certain strains in their gut and that they might not have that good cardiovascular protection from, you know, the oatmeal. You see the heart healthy information a lot of places, but if it's spiking your blood sugar to 180 or above, like it's not good for your heart. So we definitely have to choose, you know, based on that. And so I think that's really where you can take we have nutrigenomic tools. We can look at your DNA and see what kinds of foods you might want to be eating. But then you also have, hey, I'm depleted in XYZ nutrients and I need to incorporate those in my diet. And this is just another tool for people to say, hey, I am feeling pretty good. In my case, I'm at risk for diabetes with my family history. Let me use this for a couple of weeks and see, and maybe more than a couple of weeks for some people, if depending on what they see after that time, but see that data throughout the day and see how all these lifestyle things might be impacting your glucose. So Nicole, why don't you talk to us a little bit about stress and sleep? I mentioned sleep a little bit, but go into detail a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So stress and sleep and inflammation in the body are all obviously things that are contributing or helping with symptoms that you're having. But high stress levels impact blood sugar and vice versa. So stress hormones cause blood sugar to raise so that sugar is available for your cells so you can run away from the tiger that's trying to chase you and all this sort of thing. But the thing is, the body doesn't really realize that it's not the tiger that's coming after you, that it's just the donut that you had or banana or oatmeal in some cases that is causing your blood sugar to raise. So it kind of puts you in a little bit of a stress response. But when your blood sugar is unstable, so when it's going up and down and like dips low, like your body kind of reacts to that and it tells your brain that something's going on, something's wrong. It can lead to a lot of anxiety, hypervigilance, depression, all kinds of things. So the glucose monitor helps give you feedback about what's going on with your blood sugar so you can at least, like, if nothing else, rule out that it's the blood sugar or the food that you're eating, and you can look into other areas. But like for me, sleep, I was using a glucose monitor for a while, and I realized that my, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 a.m. wake up that was happening because my blood sugar was dipping low. And then what was happening, my body was like, oh, your blood sugar is too low. We need to get some blood sugar in your system. So it would spike my stress hormones and wake me up in the middle of the night. And that's when my brain starts going crazy and I'm in this, you know, stress spiral about all the things that I have to do, but it's 2 in the morning, so I can't do any of it right now, right? But you can use that information that you're getting from the meter to kind of help your body to be able to regulate blood sugar by eating a high protein snack before you go to bed and things like that. And just like knowing how the different foods affect your blood sugar can literally help calm your body down. That will help calm your mind down. So you won't wake up in the middle of the night nearly as frequently due to low blood sugar. You can kind of pay attention to what's going on and like mitigate your stress levels. And you can see like, oh, my blood sugar was really high today. What was going on? Like, oh, maybe I was more stressed than I thought I was. Maybe there's something going on at work or a deadline or something that like you didn't realize how stressful that is on your physical body because you didn't think like it didn't feel like it necessarily. But you can kind of see like how the daily things and how sleep itself affects your blood sugar and all these different things. And it shows you how important each piece of health is. We're always looking to regulate cortisol levels into normal levels. And that just helps with so many different symptoms and so many different disease states beyond diabetes and blood sugar itself.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the times in life where this, we see a lot more women in particular having trouble controlling blood sugars, but also having trouble with some of those hormone mm-hmm. cascades is during menopause or perimenopause. And so in that time period, progesterone levels drop, we don't ovulate as much. And then progesterone actually has a calming effect on some of these stress hormones. And so without that, we get the rise in cortisol, which contributes to some of this what Nicole is talking about. So I think one of the other things about CGM is that it allows you to like take this data, but then like look at the bigger picture of like everything that's affecting it. It's not just food. It's not just sleep. All of these things are inputs. One of my colleagues in the diabetes space has like a diagram of like the 100 things that affect your blood sugar levels. And I need to get a copy of it from her. But for example, like women in the postpartum period, I had a lady who has diabetes and it got worse during that, not postpartum, excuse me, menopause period, got worse during when she went into menopause. And then she was sleeping like 3 hours a night. We put her on bioidentical hormone replacement therapy with oral progesterone, which the metabolites of oral progesterone have a really good GABAergic or calming effect on that stress hormone. And then also an estrogen, which estrogen plays a role in glucose control and insulin sensitivity. And her blood sugars are looking so much better. And she's sleeping 7 hours a night, which the blood sugar is looking better could be partially from the sleeping 7 hours a night, partially from the hormones. And so there's a lot of different pieces. And it's not always this one intervention is going to make or break everything that's going on. It's going to be a lot of different things that you're fixing. We always describe hormones as like a symphony. So you're like having this whole symphony of hormones happening. And if you fix one thing, I mean, having the French horns playing this really loud is not going to help the whole thing, right? So we have to look at all the different pieces of that. Okay. So Katie, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the recent data that's come out in particular in these patients that don't have diabetes?
Yeah. So, you know, I think when you say the word glucose or monitoring your glucose, everybody thinks like, oh, I have to be diabetic to have that. But there's been more data coming out that and the importance of catching it early. So this study was from Sarah Gottfried and continuous glucose monitoring for the early identification of the pre-diabetes. You know, so 1 in 3 adults is having pre-diabetic numbers coming up. And so that variability in the glucose is triggering damage to your blood vessels and increasing your cardiovascular risk. So even when you're going to the doctor and they're checking your glucose, that fasting glucose and that A1C, those numbers can be normal, but those are only taking a snapshot in time. And so using the CGM, that can track throughout the day, real-time data. And so you can get the information of how your numbers are responding. And so again, that like single measurement isn't going to be adequate to detect all the downstream dysfunction that sets up people for a chronic disease later in life.
Yeah. I mean, I think that whole idea again of like, let me see how this is affecting, like what's happening is the first step. And then being able to look at the data and the people with prediabetes and how this is impacting everything, I think is really important. What they published here was basically like what they're going to do, I believe, in this. It was a BMJ open glucose monitoring. Basically, they're looking at a systematic review and meta-analysis of all of this data. So we'll have more information to come in the future, but it will include all the studies that are looking at some of these metrics in patients that don't have diabetes. So it's really important work that they're doing.
Yeah. And a lot of the data has been on patients with diabetes. So it's coming in, mm-hmm. you know, more and more are studying on non-diabetic patients and catching it early, which is what we try to do at Farm to Table, is catch things and get to the root before it gets into all the downstream effects that are, and then it's, you know, patients and managing symptoms.
Yeah. And I think the part of even smaller studies, there was one study that looked at 30 patients that were evaluating their dietary patterns and they ate similar amounts of proteins and fats and things like that. But they saw that the people that were more at risk for diabetes, they tended to have these high, like the postprandials, like you talked about. So that's the after meal blood sugars. And so that's really where we see things rise before we see the fasting. Traditionally, the fasting was like what we went on. So if you had a fasting over 126, you have diabetes. If you have fasting over 100, you had pre-diabetes. And then when we started to move towards A1C, we capture a little bit more of the postprandial. But if you're having these high postprandials and you're dropping in the middle of the night, so you're going into the 60s, like your average A1C is going to look okay, but we're still missing that postprandial rise, which is the initial part of that glucose dysregulation that we see. So that's really why CGM can bring something additional, because the only other way to test that is give you, I mean, we do this in pregnancy. We give patients this oral glucose tolerance test. We have them drink the solution, wait 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour, depending on which test we're doing, and then see what their glucose level is. But that's not real life to like have just this glucose load. I mean, it's standardized, but it's not like we're going to have protein and fat and all these things that we would normally have in a meal. So it doesn't give you as much information on the day-to-day and the dietary response. So it's really exciting to see more discussion of this, more data. Certainly before we like blanketly recommend everybody go out there with the CGM, we certainly need to see more data. But if you are, especially those patients that are at risk for diabetes or approaching menopause, those kinds of things, it would definitely be worth your while to wear one for a couple of weeks and see how it goes. Again, off-label from the indications from the FDA. And then I guess to close out, we could talk a little bit about sort of what we do at Farm to Table to address this. So if we see people with dysregulated blood sugars, you know, what do we do? So I don't know which one of you guys wants to start, and then I can sort of wrap that up.
Yeah. So I think it's cool to see, you know, you don't have to rely on the latest diet trend, the keto and all, everything like that. Like you can really go to your doctor, ask them if they can write a prescription for the CGM, and then you can wear it for a couple of weeks and see how what you're doing is affecting you and how you can make changes to your diet. So even the order of foods that you eat, like we get the bread that comes out first at the restaurant, but maybe waiting a little bit and having a salad and some chicken first and then having the bread, that really can impact how you respond to that spike. Yeah. So it's all about tailoring your diet to you and how your lifestyle is. And same thing with measuring how you respond to stress and how you're sleeping. It's just really cool to see the personalized effect and how it affects you.
Yeah, Nicole, anything else you want to add?
I guess one thing that we didn't really touch on that much, but maybe slightly, but the idea of wearing the sensor kind of freaks people out. When I was wearing it, people would ask me and then like, oh no, it's so great. Like you should check it out and whatever. And then be like, oh no, I could never. Like, it's really not that bad. When Katie was talking about how the Libre thing makes this big clunk noise, like I think I think that was intentional to distract you. Because when I did it, it was like, oh, let me press it. There's this loud noise. Oh, it's in my arm. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. That was easy. Right. But like the biggest thing for me, it has been just like, okay, I'm trying to place it properly so I don't hit it on the door frame necessarily or something like that. Because it's not necessarily pleasant to have something attached to you than hitting things. But anyway, overall, the whole process is pretty easy, pretty simple to do, and you can get a lot of good information. And like Katie was talking about, like when you're working with a provider, looking at the levels, like it means a lot more than just, okay, what did you eat and when? And you can really put it all together and kind of get a good picture of what your health is looking like, even just with this one thing that you're testing. Like we mentioned multiple times already, there's so many different things that go into a blood sugar reading, but we can really take a step back and take time to look at, you know, what's going on in your lifestyle, what's going on in your life, what are you thinking, what are you feeling, what are you eating, all the things to really help you get a better picture of what's going on in your body.
Absolutely. And I think from looking at this whole picture, we're talking about sleep, we're talking about nutrition. If we do supplements with patients with diabetes, we certainly want to make sure some of their nutrients that are really important in glucose regulation are adequate, like magnesium, zinc is really important. There's actually a small study of patients, actually a couple of studies of patients with pre-diabetes that had lower zinc levels. They supplemented them with, one study was about 20 milligrams of zinc sulfate. The other study was 30 milligrams of zinc sulfate. And people progressed to diabetes in the group that didn't get zinc, essentially. I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head. I should have put that down, but I'll try to link some of those in the show notes too. Sometimes addressing nutrient depletions is a piece of this picture too. Certainly there are herbs and other supplements that might address insulin sensitivity, but getting to the root of these lifestyle things, the nutrition things, is really our first step. And then from there, you know, addressing gut health is really important for diabetes too. We're finding more and more and more information. Even the endocrinology associations, there's something called the egregious 11, which they recognize as like the 11 mechanisms to what happens with patients with diabetes. And even that part of the 11 is this gut piece, this inflammation in the gut, this intestinal permeability, and this microbiome imbalance. We know that certain microbes actually help hormones that help support the glucose and the insulin production. And so there's just a lot out there that we're learning more and more about, which good bugs are supportive and which prebiotics, which is that food for the good bacteria, are the best for those patients. So working with a provider, again, is going to help you take this data, look at your whole picture, look at your labs, like put it all together and really figure out what's the best step moving forward for you to be healthy and to prevent the progression to diabetes for sure. Well, thank you, ladies, for joining today. And again, if people are listening and they're like, hey, I'm really interested in that, I want to learn more, definitely check us out at farmtotable, PharmToTable.life, LIFE. And you can click make an appointment or check out our provider list and look at your state and see if we have someone that can help you in your state. So we cover about 35 states right now. And so if you're a pharmacist listening to this podcast and you see your state not on there, you also should get in touch. So, all right, we'll take care and I'll talk to you later soon.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.